Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com, and this is a podcast for anyone who wants to discover how to succeed with testing and automation, as well as what works for testing any software development project. Before we get started, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. One of my biggest pain points as a test automation engineer is having to run tests against Internet Explorer. So if you're an automation engineer using Selenium that has a requirement that forces you to test against IE browsers, this episode is for you. If you want to learn the secrets to how to succeed with Selenium IE automation, you've come to the right place. I'm excited today to have on the show Jim Evans. Jim is one of the key contributors to the Selenium project and is the man behind the Selenium.NET bindings and the Internet Explorer driver. Check it out. Hey, Jim. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we get started, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, well, I have been working in the testing world for about 20 years now as a software tester. I've worked for folks like Microsoft and Intuit. I currently work for Salesforce.com. I've been working with the Selenium project as a committer for about the last 5 years or so. And I currently am the owner and maintainer of the open source Internet Explorer driver implementation and the .NET bindings.
So basically, you're the guy behind the IE driver for Selenium.
For better or for worse.
So my question to you is, why is it so hard to write Selenium scripts against IE as opposed to Firefox and Chrome?
Well, there are some challenges that go along with Internet Explorer. One of the biggest challenges that I have found that people run into when they're dealing with, they tell me my script works fine in Google Chrome or it works fine in Firefox, but it doesn't work in Internet Explorer. One of the biggest challenges that they have is synchronization. So you go to look for an element and Firefox and Chrome are fast enough to render it and find it in the DOM when you ask for it. But Internet Explorer is just slow enough that your Selenium code runs too fast and tries to find the element, and it's not there when you ask for it. So synchronization is probably the biggest challenge that I've seen that people have when writing WebDriver code. And I'm going to use the term Selenium and WebDriver pretty much interchangeably at this point. So that's the biggest challenge with WebDriver code that I've seen that people have is synchronization.
So with synchronization, how do you tell people to handle that? Just have a longer waits and just know when you run against IE, it's going to be longer generally than against Chrome or Firefox?
Well, generally what I recommend is that you use one of the WebDriver constructs that's available in the support namespaces or the support libraries called a WebDriver wait. And it's a pretty simple thing that you could do on your own, but we've just provided a sort of a wrapper mechanism that does it, that you provide it with a condition that you check for to be true and the driver polls for that condition to be true before continuing on. So it's check for the condition, wait for a very short time, check for the condition again. It's a polling wait as opposed to a straight thread.sleep, which of course could be very wasteful.
Awesome. Yeah, great advice. For some reason, I've seen a lot of engineers using actual hard waits when they could use a better waiting method like that.
The thread.sleep thing is something that a lot of people use. And I use it on occasion when I'm debugging a problem. Like if I suspect there's a timing problem, I will temporarily throw in a thread.sleep just to see if that solves it. And if it does, that means I need to use a wait mechanism.
Right. Or I'll use it when I know it's going to take 60 seconds no matter what to get a response back. Like, it shall wait 60 seconds for this to happen, then I'll do a hard wait, but that's about the only time. Do you have any advice for testers to create scripts that handle older versions of IE? Say they need to run against IE9 and IE10. Do we need to develop our scripts differently for that?
In general, not so much. The driver is pretty well version agnostic. Some of the places where you might run into some challenges, though, are in things like certain locators. And I'm looking specifically at CSS selectors, because WebDriver uses whatever the native CSS selector engine is of the browser. And current versions of Internet Explorer have support for CSS3 selectors, where, so for example, nth of type, that kind of thing, where older or legacy versions of Internet Explorer do not support those. And so in locators, you might want to be careful. Some of the other challenges that you might want to look at are things like, if you have very JavaScript-heavy test suites, there are some issues with the 64-bit version of Internet Explorer's JavaScript engine in certain versions of Internet Explorer being considerably slower than the one used in the 32-bit version of Internet Explorer. But in general, that's just a performance thing. That's not going to be, you know, your script has to perform differently or has to do different steps.
Awesome. So in terms of performance, I thought I read this on someone's blog that with IE, is CSS or XPath slower than if it was against Chrome or Firefox?
That's a good question. Now, I've seen benchmarks that dispute both assertions. However, I can tell you that currently shipping versions of Internet Explorer from 6 all the way up through 11 do not have a native XPath engine for querying the DOM over XPath, whereas Firefox and Chrome do. They provide a you can call document.evaluate direct from the developer console of both of those browsers and get a response back using an XPath. Internet Explorer has no such animal. So what we do in the Internet Explorer driver is we use an open source JavaScript XPath implementation to simulate that functionality. And of course, since you're using JavaScript, then of course you have to take into account how performant is the JavaScript engine. Now, modern versions of Internet Explorer have a very good and very performant JavaScript engine, but legacy versions of Internet Explorer, say 6, 7, 8, do not compare nearly as favorably performance-wise with JavaScript. So I would expect that XPath locators might be slower in those versions of Internet Explorer than in, say, later versions. Now, on the plus side, Microsoft is currently in the process of developing a native XPath DOM engine, which will make it into some future version of Internet Explorer. So that's good news on that front.
Talking about Microsoft, I keep hearing about the browser vendors will soon be responsible for maintaining Selenium. Is that true? I don't know if I understood that correctly. And if so, do you know if Microsoft's on board with that effort?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because most of your listeners, if they're doing testing of web applications and they're not familiar with what the World Wide Web Consortium is, or the W3C, that is a group of companies that gets together that decides what the web is. It's the group that's responsible for putting out the standards for CSS, for what the DOM looks like, for all of the great technologies that make up websites. Now, one of the newer features or specs that's being put out or worked on by the World Wide Web Consortium is a web driver specification, which is based on the current behavior of the web driver or Selenium open source project. That's becoming a W3C standard. And as such, that gives browser vendors a specification which they can use then to implement as part of their browser delivery that gives them a web driver that is part of the browser. Currently, Google's, or the Chromium team, I should say, actually provides the Chrome implementation for a Chrome driver. That the Chromium team owns and maintains that driver for Chrome. Mozilla is in the process of working on an updated Firefox driver, which of course they would own. That is called Marionette, and they have some documentations on that as part of the Mozilla website. You can go and look up there and search for it and find out what the progress is on that. It's in process and getting ready to be shipped hopefully soon, but they're still working on that. Microsoft has already shipped an implementation of the current working draft of the WebDriver spec. The tricky bit is that the WebDriver spec is currently only an editor's draft. It's not currently at the states where it's a candidate recommendation or a fully fleshed out standard. So the Microsoft implementation at present, they will tell you that it's, you know, an experimental feature, and the all of the features that you have come to rely on in the current, you know, Selenium project may not be available in their WebDriver implementation. But that implementation has been shipped and works for Internet Explorer 11. The open source implementation does allow you to use that implementation if you have all of the appropriate pieces installed. And if you tell the Internet Explorer driver to use that implementation, it will use it. So they're already working on it. They're working very close with the W3C working group that is producing the WebDriver spec. And I am an invited expert to that working group. So I work very closely with folks from Microsoft that attend those same working group meetings as well. They're very engaged in the process, and I couldn't be happier with the work that they've done so far in helping us to implement a vendor-provided WebDriver implementation for Internet Explorer. It's great stuff. It's good times.
We make software for hospitals, and pretty much all hospitals, for some reason, their standard is IE. So we struggle a lot with some IE testing. So that would be great if Microsoft actually follows through with that.
The current the current plan is for their implementation to be supported in Internet Explorer 11. That's the version that is currently supported by their WebDriver implementation. And going forward, it'll be supported by the future versions as well.
Very cool. Speaking about WebDriver, any news on WebDriver 3.0?
That's a good question. Yes, we announced WebDriver 3.0, or that we were working on it, at the annual Selenium conference that was held in Boston in 2013. And now here we are after the following Selenium conference in 2014, and we still haven't delivered a Selenium 3.0 implementation. We're still laying the groundwork for that. The thing that a lot of people, I don't think, realize about the Selenium project is that from the Selenium side of things, those of us that actually contribute to it, there's no Selenium Foundation that pays us to work on it. There's no company that sponsors the Selenium project to support the developers developing on it. So the schedule can be somewhat flexible in that respect, because it's when people have the time and ability to expend the effort to work on it, that's when things get done. We've done some work very recently to split out some of the legacy, the Selenium RC bits, which is the prerequisite for Selenium 3.0. So Selenium 3.0 is intended to be WebDriver focused, and the Selenium RC, or remote control pieces, consisting of the old Selenium, what we would call the Selenium 1.0 API or the old Selenium RC API, to be moved out to a separate download package in Selenium 3. We are actively working on getting that done, but I can't give you a time frame for when that could happen or when to expect it or anything like that. I know that Simon Stewart, who is one of the project coordinators, has really been trying to put some effort into getting that done and moving that effort along. A lot more effort on that recently. So I would expect some movement on that within the next few months, I would hope.
Cool. Yeah, I was at the Selenium 2013 conference in Boston, and it does seem like there's just a handful of really core contributors. So how can we help out more? Is that something you see a need for within the Selenium community? More people helping out, maybe, to maybe help? Rather than people asking when something's going to appear, maybe they can start contributing to help it move along faster?
Well, you know, we love having people jump in and make contributions and help with stuff. That's one of the great things. There are a couple of mailing lists that they can start to become active on that are available through Google Groups, specifically the Selenium Developers list. The other big resource and the place where you can sort of get involved in a more immediate way is probably just start connecting to the Selenium IRC channel. That's where the bulk of the contributors are active on a day-to-day basis. You know, we're logged in almost all the time. There's somebody from the project who's actively in the IRC channel. It's pound Selenium is the channel name, and it's on the Freenode IRC network. And that's probably the easiest and best way for people to start getting involved. We're a pretty sociable bunch there. It's not a channel that has to be completely technically focused. We do tend to be a little social on there. And I'd like to think we're somewhat approachable. And, you know, people can come on there and ask, hey, what can I help out with? And people can get started that way. And we're more than happy to help out, get people started and get them able to build the project and get started to contribute however they can. The other thing that they can do is the project is hosted on GitHub, or the code for the project is hosted on GitHub, which they can fork and make pull requests on GitHub as well.
Cool. I've had it on my list for a while to start contributing or trying to help out, but I am intimidated for some reason to start, but I think I definitely something I've been wanting to do for a while.
Well, it can be intimidating at first because there's a lot of different technologies involved in the core Selenium project. There's all the different language bindings, of course, which are the project provides a .NET language binding, a Ruby language binding, a Python, a Java, and a JavaScript language binding. And so just that list of languages alone, by no means does anybody have to be an expert in all those languages to contribute. A lot of the implementation of Selenium or of WebDriver is done in JavaScript, and a fair amount of it's done in Java as well. So those are the kinds of things that can seem intimidating at first, and we have a fairly complicated build system because we have to support so many environments. But again, that's where we're more than happy to help people work through those initial hiccups in getting an environment set up and trying to figure out, so how do I actually make changes in this thing and see what they do?
Is there one thing you see over and over again in your experience that most people creating Selenium scripts for IE are doing wrong?
Well, let's see. So Well, we talked about synchronization. That's one thing that's really that I see people don't normally think about, because a lot of people start out writing their scripts for Chrome or for Firefox because that's the browser that they have on their MacBook Pro, or that's the browser that they have on their Linux workstation, and they can write their scripts there. And then they go to execute them against Internet Explorer, and that's that they start to fall over. So we talked about that as one thing. Another thing that I see people not doing a lot of or having or struggling with a little bit is IE configuration and properly configuring Internet Explorer to work with the IE driver. In particular, there's a requirement to use the Internet Explorer driver that you have to set your protected mode settings for the browser properly. And if you don't, there's a setting or a capability that you can pass through that tells the driver to ignore that check, where we check to see if the settings are set properly. And so a lot of people, since there are a lot of code online that demonstrates how to use that bypass or that setting, that capability, they just do that blindly to get rid of the exception that says, hey, your protected mode settings aren't set properly. And then they start to have problems with things in Internet Explorer, with running the automation. So the biggest thing I could recommend is, you know, make sure that you're actually setting protected mode, the setting for all of the zones, the security zones, to be the same for all zones. And it doesn't have to be disabled. You don't have to turn it off. You don't have to change the actual security settings of Internet Explorer. You know, you shouldn't have to touch those, but you do have to set the protected mode settings to be the same for all zones for the browser. And there are technical reasons for that due to the way that the driver drives Internet Explorer. There are reasons that you can't cross a protected mode boundary. Things just break when you do. So that's probably the single biggest thing that I would say. Watch out for that.
Yeah, I agree. For some reason, it is well documented, I think, online, yet people that I work with, I always get people ask me, it's not working on my machine. And it always turns out usually to be 80% of the time it's that setting with the protected mode. Also the zoom setting, if for some reason the zoom's like 105 or 110, that'll kill it too.
Yeah, it will. There is also a setting that you can use to bypass the zoom setting check, just that it's at 100%. But the challenge there is that when you go to click on an element, for example, the Internet Explorer driver, perhaps unique among the current implementations, looks for screen coordinates. And if the zoom is not set to 100%, it could miscalculate where the appropriate click point for the element is and click in a different place, perhaps even outside the bounds of the element. So that's why that check is there and why it's important to set the Zoom setting to 100%, which actually in Internet Explorer is pretty easy. When you fire up Internet Explorer, you just hit Control Zero, and that automatically sets it back to 100%. So that's pretty easy to reset if you've managed to get it set to something different.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a good tip. Here's an opposite question of that. Are there any cool things that you can do with Selenium that most people don't know about?
That's a good question. Well, obviously, the place where Selenium excels, right, the thing that really shines at is being able to write a test for one browser and then have it execute in a whole bunch of other browsers without having to change your code other than the initialization of the browser. That's what Selenium is really good for. And that's probably the coolest feature, if you will, of the project in and of itself, is just being able to do a full stack test. And, you know, browser-based UI testing is important to me, although I think I should take a moment to point out that it's by far not the only method you should be using to test, and your UI-based tests should be the smallest number of tests in your test bed. I should take a moment to point that out. As big a believer as I am in that method of testing, it's sometimes not the most the appropriate thing to use for given parts of your application. But one of the really cool things that I find that you're able to do with Selenium is just being able to interact with a website as close to the way that a user would interact with it by doing things like advanced user interactions, like with combinations of mouse and keyboard interactions, drag and drop implementations, things like that are really, really cool. Another really cool thing about the API itself is that it's starting to be adapted to a lot of different uses. That when Simon first designed it and when a lot of us started to contribute to the project, we hadn't really thought about it being used for. Like, for example, mobile testing. Testing mobile applications, not just websites, but full-on applications, which is kind of an interesting way to approach, you know, testing of those applications using this API that's, you know, nominally used for web testing. So I think that's really cool too.
Awesome. So for mobile testing, are you talking about using Appium?
Yeah, there's several projects that use different kinds of for different application environments. For example, there's Appium, which you can use to test Android applications and iOS applications as well. There's iOS Driver, which is another project that handles simply for iOS applications, as the name might imply. There's Celandroid, which is an alternative for testing Android applications. There are also implementations that allow you to test stuff in the Windows Phone operating system. Those are kind of in a very early state, but they exist. I know that the BlackBerry Research in Motion has an implementation that lets you work with the BlackBerry OS as well. Appium is certainly one of the common names, but there are other projects out there that also enter into that space as well.
Awesome. So my next question, this is pretty much a question for me, something I struggle with, and I'm just curious to know if you've ever had to deal with this.
Okay.
So any tips on how to support testing multiple languages using Selenium with IE? I know, like with Firefox and Chrome, I think you could programmatically set the language setting in that browser, but with IE, can't really find the equivalent of doing that.
Yeah, the challenge there is, and here's been the philosophy that I've used as when I created the Internet Explorer driver and has sort of been a guiding signpost for features that have been added into the driver over the course of the last few years. Unlike Firefox and Chrome, to pick two, those two browsers have a profile capability, which in this profile exists all of the settings associated for a particular user. And those profiles are easily manipulated because they're either in the file system, they're set in the file system somehow, some set of settings files that get read by the browser when the browser is launched, that you can then, by editing those settings files, can then appropriately have the browser take on whatever settings you set, if you know the format of the settings file that you need to manipulate. Internet Explorer, on the other hand, doesn't really have that kind of concept. The profile, if you will, is the currently logged in user in the operating system. And the settings, as they are kept, are usually kept somewhere that is not in the file system. It's usually somewhere opaque, somewhere in the registry. of the machine, which could be in the registry for the entire machine for any user that logs on, or it could be for the particular user that's logged in at the moment. And the philosophy for the Internet Explorer driver has been, do not permanently modify the settings of the user's system, which, of course, if you're modifying the registry, that's something that you would be doing, which is one of the reasons why we don't just set the protected mode settings for you, and we don't just set the zoom level for you, because that would involve a permanent change to the registry. And to people that say, well, just change it and then change it back, well, that ignores a couple of potential use cases that we've really tried to cater to. Things like, for example, multiple instances of Internet Explorer being automated at the same time, or the user being able to use Internet Explorer while a test is running against Internet Explorer in the background. Now, of course, some of those use cases we haven't done a really great job of being able to deliver on, but the multiple instance case at some level does work for certain cases, and I know some people are using it out there, and I would hate to break them by having competing registry rights where we write something and then another instance comes along and overwrites it, and then things get, then you don't know what state you're in after the tests are over.
I've seen certain companies at the Boston conference that gave presentations that had a very large test suite, 200,000 test suites, something like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice on how we can better maintain our tests?
So if you're running hundreds of thousands of Selenium tests, that's probably an indication that you're trying to do too much with Selenium.
Yep.
And I know of a number of companies that do have very large Selenium test suites that are actively trying to pare that number down and move a lot of that testing into more unit tests and integration tests that don't require the full browser stack. So my first advice would be get rid of a lot of those tests. It would be my first piece of advice.
Yep.
And take a good long hard look at why you feel like you need to approach testing everything through the UI layer.
Yeah, I think it's great advice. Actually, it's pretty much what everyone recommends that I speak with on this, and what I try to tell my teams. There is a lot of resistance still for it, though, for some reason.
Well, it's hard, right? Because ultimately, what's the person that's going to end up using the application is going to end up using the application through a browser. So it only makes sense that where we would want to test it is test it through a browser, just like your end user would. And that makes sure that every piece along the way, if the test passes, that makes sure that every test along the way is working and working properly. The problem and the challenge with that is that if you have a modern application, there are lots of layers along the way between the page getting delivered from the server and how that page gets rendered all the way down to the browser. And at any point along that line, something could be going wrong. And the challenge with tests that simply start and end at the UI level don't give you a lot of very good indication of where the breakage is elsewhere in the pipeline. And that's the kind of thing that solid unit testing and solid integration testing or component testing, whatever you want to call it, can help you better diagnose where those problems lie. Again, there's still a use and a need to have some of those end-to-end browser-based tests, but they really should be the very smallest number of tests in your test suite.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you've really explained that really well. It actually makes more sense, I think. If the business logic is from a web service, why are we using a browser to test that logic?
Exactly. Right. And that's another thing a lot of people want to do. I monitor our user, the user-facing mailing lists, the Selenium users mailing list. A lot of times, a surprisingly common question is, can I use Selenium to test my web service? And yes, you could, but that would be a suboptimal approach, in my opinion. I'd rather just use a raw HTTP client in whatever programming language I'm working in, whether that's a web client in Java or a HTTP web request in .NET or whatever, and just examine the responses that I get back, the raw responses, because that's going to be a whole lot more reliable than having to fire up a browser and manipulate the browser. And not only manipulating the browser, but it's also going to be a lot faster too.
Absolutely. I use the Java language bindings, and there's a great library called Rest Assured for testing our REST services, and it's so much quicker and easier and lightweight. So I definitely recommend it. So I assume that you use the .NET binding most often?
That's what I use. That's my go-to. In my work for Salesforce, we actually use Java.
Okay, cool.
So I use Java a fair amount for the stuff I actually do day-to-day in my paid work.
So are there any other tools other than Selenium that that help you automate tests better?
The thing that I have found, especially when dealing with WebDriver, is that WebDriver is a pretty bare-bones API, and it's designed to be that way. The idea is that you would take WebDriver and sort of use it as the basis for whatever else you're going to use, and use as a basis for wrapper libraries. And there are lots of great wrapper libraries that are out there. I'm a big fan of the Water API in Ruby. Is a fantastic library. And for everything except Internet Explorer, that API is based on WebDriver. So I would say that other tools first of all, look for a wrapper library that gives you the features that you need so you don't have to write them all yourself. As for other tools that I've used a fair number of, like you said, raw web service type tools that I use a lot of. I don't use a lot of behavior-driven development tools like Cucumber or JBehave. I think I like them, but I haven't had the opportunity to use them a lot in terms of being able to sort of write more expressive tests that describe better what they're doing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually started using BDD, and I use a tool called Thucydides, and it really wraps some Selenium things at a higher level, so it's a lot easier to use. That and JBehave. So I really enjoyed that. It's been pretty successful.
I do tend to believe in test-driven development when possible. It's not always possible for those of us in the hardcore just testers. We don't get that luxury a lot. But some of the BDD projects that are out there are really interesting to me. I just haven't had the opportunity to use them a lot yet.
Are there any resources or books that you would recommend to someone to learn how to get started with test automation or Selenium?
Yeah, there are some pretty good ones out there that I like. I like to steer people to the Selenium Guidebook by Dave Hafner. I think you've had him as a guest before on your podcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Episode number 2, excellent guest.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, his book is really good. A fairly new one that's just come out recently is one by Dima Kovalenko called Selenium Design Patterns and Best Practices. I like that one a lot, although full disclosure, I did write the foreword for that one. Tries to walk through some of the challenges and pitfalls and some design patterns that you can use to get around some of those pitfalls in automating websites and web testing.
All right, Jim, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their Selenium IE automation efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
So one piece of advice is I'm going to do it in two parts, and we've already covered some of it. Watch your configuration of Internet Explorer, and if you have a language that allows you to step through the execution of your tests, like, for example, Java with breakpoints in your IDE or .NET with breakpoints in your IDE in Visual Studio, use that to stop your test at the point where you think it's going to fail, or right at the point it's going to fail, and make sure that the application under test is in the state that you think it's in. The best way to get a hold of me is probably through Twitter. You can reach me at Jim Evans Music. That's my Twitter handle. I'm pretty responsive there. You can also find me on the Selenium IRC channel almost every workday, U.S. East Coast Business Hours. I usually hang out there. And again, that's Pound Selenium on Freenode, the Freenode IRC network. And those are probably the two best places to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jim. I think this will be a great resource.
Well, thanks again, Joe, for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Jim, for sharing your automation awesomeness. If you feel that this episode has helped you, pass it on to a friend. And if you want to increase your karma, I appreciate any reviews and ratings you leave in iTunes. Ratings do matter in the rankings, and I appreciate any feedback on the show. And remember, all the links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode can be found in the show notes at www.testtalks.com/28. While you're there, be sure to check out our sponsor, Sauce Labs, and their special offer for Test Talks listeners under the Sauce Labs sponsorship area. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.